Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. When Peter adopted Cosmo from the shelter a few years ago, he was a playful but nervous, mostly black, 50-pound dog who looked to us like a pit bull mix. And that is how he was described by the shelter staff and how he was referred to on his papers. We had no reason to question whether that was correct or to wonder how it was decided. We just thought he would be perfect for our family, and we were right. But since then, we had learned about the pitfalls and limitations in labeling dogs based on their appearance. Just because someone at a shelter says a given dog is a pit mix or a shepherd mix doesn't make it so. And since dogs labeled as pit bulls or pit bull mixes can be subjected to discrimination, like being prohibited from apartment buildings or even banned in towns and cities, we need to be careful how these labels are applied. How do dogs of unknown lineage get assigned labels, and do the labels help or hurt efforts to increase adoptions or save the lives of dogs in shelters? Today, the show is all about breed labels, and to start us off, first, I'm very pleased to welcome Victoria Voith, professor at Western University of Health Sciences and content expert for animal behavior and the human-animal bond. Welcome to the program, Victoria.
Thank you.
Victoria, let's go way back to the original research in the 60s by Scott and Fuller, which you refer to. What did that show?
Well, Scott and Fuller did research in the 50s and 60s and 70s on behaviors of specific breeds of dogs and their crosses. So he had five purebred dogs, breeds, and crossed them and looked at how they did certain puzzles and learning things. But in the process of doing that, he was struck by the diversity of what the offspring looked like of the two purebred crosses. And so he, maybe as an aside almost, put that information and pictures in a book. And if you look at the offspring of two purebred parents, very often they may not look much like either parent. And then once you cross those offspring to other offspring that are mixed breeds, they even look less like their original close ancestors. So you get very diverse appearances. It's sort of like if you look at a family of people, there's a wide variety of appearances. And that's what happens when you start crossing purebred dogs a couple of times. You get all sorts of combinations.
How did you get interested in the issue of visual breed identification, Victoria?
Well, I've always been curious about it for many decades, particularly since I liked German Shepherds and Siberian Huskies. And when I would go through shelters and I'd see dogs that were identified as German Shepherds that didn't look at all like them, or Huskies that didn't look at all like them, I was intrigued. And then I worked at shelters for a while and saw the diversity of opinions that were up there. So I systematically started taking pictures and trying to, with the idea of just seeing how often the identifications of dogs at shelters would be an agreement among people, an inter-observer reliability. And about the time I got that study on the way, the DNA testing came out. So I scrapped those and went for what's the actual relationship between the identification and the DNA, and then also the inter-observer reliability of the identifications and how they matched with DNA. So it was a matter of curiosity. And then as I began to write these papers up, I began to realize how this would affect many dogs' lives, how they were identified, particularly when it could be wrong as far as housing restrictions, whether they're people are allowed to have their dogs in muzzles. And pit bulls are the ones that are generally included in this, but also German Shepherds, Rottweilers, and a variety of other breeds. So it started as a matter of curiosity, and then I began to realize that this misidentification and lack of even agreement among people in professions has a wide set of implications. And I then realized that the databases we have on what breeds are predisposed to certain behavior problems, or a variety of things like that, are all based on people's perceptions of what those dogs were, which could have been tabulated from veterinary office records, could have been tabulated from shelters, could have been tabulated from hospital records, and we have no idea how accurate they were when they got into all these databases and research papers.
In 2010, you presented your research on dog breed identification. Describe what you did and what were your findings.
The studies indicated that most of the time, people identifying the set of dogs I had did not identify the primary breed that was in that dog if they were identifying a primary breed. And quite often they would identify a breed that wasn't even in the DNA, at least for the first several generations. So I would say overall it was about 25% to 30% of the time they would at least, they might identify a dog that is in the breed, might identify a breed that is in the dog.
Yeah.
So it's low.
Yeah. And how reliable is DNA testing to determine the breed of dog?
Well, the company, which I think is the only company at this time that has a commercial product out there, is a pretty good scientifically based company. And at the present time, they are stating that their results of an F1 offspring, which is the offspring of two purebreds, is at least 90% of the time accurate. So when you get to the crosses of that, those F1s, you're probably getting lower and lower.
Yeah.
So I would say it's probably 90% of the time accurate, at least in identifying the dogs that are in there. But this is, of course, all proprietary information from a commercial company. And it's based on the dogs they had in their database, which are all purebred AKC, American Kennel Club dogs.
Yeah.
So I think they probably did a pretty good job.
How prevalent is visual breed identification among shelters and adoption agencies?
Well, they generally identify the dog. Most of the time, they probably do it by visual identification. But they may also be identifying the dog as a certain breed because the person who brought it in said, I'm the owner and this is its breed. So it's hard to determine exactly how that breed of dog got attached to a particular dog. But I believe most shelters probably visually identify the dogs if there's, because I don't think most dogs come in with somebody telling them what breed it is. Oh, and the problem with many shelters, and this isn't just shelters, it's other types of forms that are required to be filled out. The people working at the shelters or these organizations are forced to put a breed down. If they say it's a mixed breed and all I want to write down is mixed breed, they're forced by the employers to put down, well, if it's a mixed breed, what do you think is the most likely mixed breed it is?
Yeah.
And that is even in research papers where people are asked, well, what breed of dog do you think your dog is? Or what breed of dog do you think it is that bit somebody? And they'll say, well, it's a mixed breed. And they'll say, well, what do you think its predominant breed is? So people are being forced to make a guess even if they're not that 100% sure that that's what it is.
Are shelter professionals any better at identifying the genetic lineage of dogs than your average observer?
That's a good question. I suspect many of them are not.
Yeah.
There may be a few that are, but that's something that I think people are starting to look at. And it's not because they can't identify purebred dogs. It's because they look at a certain feature of a dog that they know is related to purebred dogs, and that then becomes the purebred dog. So they don't necessarily take everything into consideration, or maybe the other points that they usually look for happen to not be in that genetic mix. This bias of perception and attending to certain features has been studied by psychologists, and they have found that even people in psychology who are well aware of this predisposition to be prejudiced when they're assessing something still make the same amount of errors. So I suspect maybe they're not any better than the average person.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a good question, and I suspect most of the time they're probably pretty close.
Don't go away. We're speaking about visual breed identification in dogs, and we're talking to Victoria Voith, and you're listening to Animals Today. Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows and where you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com, or you can listen on iTunes. Also, make sure to like us on Facebook and join the discussion. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit them at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animals, how we treat them, and their place in society, while promoting greater respect and kindness towards them. So thanks for your support. That website again is aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
That is the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag for the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them? So show dogs will be quiet during transit between shows or in the ring? So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day? Animals Today says shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the veterinarians who perform this unnecessary, inhumane surgery on them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice to protect theirs. This message is brought to you by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Visit them at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org.
Attention invention and gadget lovers. Join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month, we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions, and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month, you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several hundred dollars or $20, $30. Every month, it's different, but we need your evaluation. And it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490.
Here's the problem. You have stains everywhere on your car seat, on your love seat, on your carpet, on your upholstery, on your silk shirt. Everywhere there are stains. Solution? Stains are out. Made with biodegradable organic banana oil, there are no other stain removers with the power. Stains are out. It takes out oil, nail polish, any stains, old stains, new stains, pet stains, independently laboratory tested to get all your stains out. Nothing better than Stains Are Out with over 30 million bottles sold. Stains Are Out is going to give you the best results you've ever had. It comes in a concentrate. One bottle makes 16 bottles of stain remover. Normally sells for $29.99. I know, sounds a little expensive, but that one bottle makes 16. That's $2 a bottle. And does your stain remover take out graffiti? That's right. Even graffiti comes out with Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere, or your money back. And here's the deal. Your deal of the week, if you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out, we'll give you a second bottle free. That's right, $29.99. Now you're going to get 32 bottles with a stain remover, still only $29.99. I want you to call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. But we're not done yet. If you, the first 50 customers, if you call within the first 50 customers, you're not going to get two bottles of Stains Are Out. We're going to double it again. four bottles. That's right, four bottles of stains around 64 bottles worth of stain remover, still only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490, 888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. This is a powerful formula. This might be the best stain remover ever. Stain remover. You want to pick up the phone, call 1-888-877-0490. And here's the guarantee: any stain, anywhere, on anything, or your money back. If it doesn't work for you, we'll buy.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. We're speaking with Victoria Voith about visual breed identification. Victoria, what are the harmful consequences of, one, labeling of dogs, and two, miscategorizing dog breeds?
Well, some of the consequences of the mislabeling and misidentification is that it can affect the adoption of the pet, of the dog from the shelter, and then subsequently affect how that dog is treated by the people who adopt it. It also affects whether or not people lose their dog if they're for the private legislation or private restrictions, such as you can't rent this apartment if you have a dog that looks like a pit bull or looks like a German shepherd. And the pet loses its home, and the owners may lose their pet. So it can be a very sad situation all around.
Yeah, you talk about legislation. So breed-specific legislation is often aimed at pit bulls, like banning the possession or ownership or sterilization of pit bulls or pit bull mixes in a given area. And yet it seems we cannot even decide whether a given dog is indeed a pit bull. So what's the solution?
Well, there are several problems with the legislation, and one is that we don't know exactly what a pit bull is. It's a term used for a particular phenotype, which has a certain look that people assume are pit bulls. And there are multiple registrations that have the words pit bulls in them for purebreds, and it's a whole mess as to exactly what is considered a pit bull. I think the breed-specific legislation was initiated because people wanted to increase the safety of individuals and other animals in an area, and this was based on data that was published in reputable journals that was overblown in its validity as far as the database was of the dogs. This was based on information in the literature that seemed to indicate that pit bulls, German shepherds, Rottweilers were more aggressive than other breeds, which we now know is probably the data they had to decide this. Now, the information they used to decide this was probably inaccurate.
Right, right. So you're saying more research is really needed.
Yes, more research is really needed on this whole thing. And some of the new information that's coming out indicates, or reports anyway, that in areas where they have banned specific breeds, bites have not gone down, and that the cost that goes into trying to initiate these breed-specific bans is economically quite steep. And maybe we would be better off just trying to manage and legislate well-behaved dogs or legislate, look for particularly dangerous individuals, looking at the individual dog and management by the owner as opposed to specifically zeroing in on specific breeds.
Dr. Victoria Voith, thank you for your expertise.
Thank you for calling me and asking about the research that's going on in this area, and I appreciated being able to share that information with you.
As opponents of breed-specific legislation and unfair stereotyping of dog breeds, we here at Animals Today and the nonprofit group that largely supports the radio show, Advancing the Interests of Animals, were interested to learn about the actions of Florida's Orange County Animal Services to deal with subjective descriptions of dogs in the shelter. Here to talk to us about it is Diane Summers, Program Manager of the Communications Team at Orange County Animal Services. Hey there, Diane.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Diane, in the past on Animals Today, we have discussed the difficulty and limitations in looking at a given dog and correctly identifying its genetic makeup. Please tell us about the problems of this practice.
Well, for our shelter, we take in around 20,000 animals each year. Most of those are cats, but a fair share of them are dogs, probably around 8,000, and the majority of them arrive as strays with no known information as to their heritage nor their medical background. So in our shelter's history, we've always been guessing, but last year we stopped guessing. We stopped trying to put a breed on them and just left it up to the shelter visitors to determine what they're looking at.
And why did you do that?
It was an idea that came from one of our advisory board members at the time, who had also started a photography group known as Positive Shelter Photography. With the improved photos that our shelter was putting out there, his belief was that we didn't need to put a label on the dogs, that the pictures were good enough to speak for themselves, that people should come down, meet the animals, go by personality, rather than putting too much thought into breed and what can sometimes be traits that go along with certain breeds when it's really just guesses. So we thought it was a pretty crazy idea when we first heard it, but figured, why not? Let's do it. And the results were pretty surprising.
Okay, so what did you find?
We thought there'd be a pretty big backlash just because it was a pretty radical change for us at the time. I remember we put it on our website and we put it on Facebook, and we did get an overwhelming response, but it was positive. There were a couple negative comments here and there, but for the most part, people were very supportive and very excited about this.
Do potential adopters come to the shelter expecting and wanting labels?
I think some people still are. They'll look at our kennel cards, which no longer say any kind of breed designation, and ask if a staff member's walking by, hey, can you tell me what kind of dog this is? And we've all been, rehearsing kind of situations with each other, and when that happens, we kind of turn the tables back on them and say, I don't know, what do you think it looks like? And then if they throw some ideas out there, we tell them it could be any one of those. You know, came in as a stray, we don't really know. And we have in our kennel a poster board of all the breeds. So if somebody's really stumped looking at a dog, we direct them over there and say, hey, why don't you go try and match it up there as best you can. If you don't see one that stands out, it could be a mix of a couple of them.
Diane, you mentioned you received a lot of positive feedback on Facebook and social media. Why do you think the community likes this idea?
Most of the positive comments related to the negative stigma that pit bulls can have sometimes in pit bull mixed dogs. That is primarily what our shelter receives. And a lot of the people that follow our shelter feel that those dogs are kind of given an unfair rap from the start. So they were hopeful that by removing breed labels, those dogs would have a better chance from our shelter and that their personalities would be able to shine through rather than that initial breed label.
So when the labels were removed, did that improve the adoption rate of pit bulls or dogs overall?
Well, that's a bit of a tricky question for us because at the same time we dropped the breed labels, we expanded our hours to include Sundays. We stopped doing landlord checks. We did a whole bunch of new advertising. We added some staff. So there was a whole bunch of changes that we did right in the beginning of 2014 that really had a huge impact on our live release rate overall. So for us, it's kind of difficult to determine, you know, which of those was really the cause to our success, but we've definitely seen a boost in our adoption numbers. But that is kind of a steady increase that we had seen coming for quite some time, too.
And how about the staff? Are they liking this?
Yeah, the staff, it took a little bit of getting used to at first because, you know, it was a pretty groundbreaking idea for some of us to hear at first. And, you know, we've been in this industry for so long that it seems crazy to not, you know, go by breed. But, you know, we're all used to it now. It just seems like normal business. And we got that initial reaction at first when we did the change. But since then, we've just gone back to business and as usual, and it's been pretty calm.
Yeah, well, congratulations. That's all great news. Diane Summers, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
As temperatures climb, please remember never to leave your dog in the car, even for just a minute. Because even with the windows cracked and your car parked in the shade, the temperature inside can climb up in a matter of minutes, high enough to kill your pet. If you love your dog, leave them at home. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a minute to save their life. Here are a couple steps you can take. Make an announcement in the store or business that the car is parked nearest to. Also, call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two for a dog to get seriously ill or die in a car on a warm day. So swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. So never leave a dog or any animal inside a car on a warm day, not even for a minute. This message is brought to you by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at AIAnimals.org. That's AIAnimals.org.
You got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the Doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS, the Solutionist, on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You could be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's True Reality Radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
Attention invention and gadget lovers. Join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month, we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions, and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month, you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several $100s or $20, $30. Every month, it's different, but we need your evaluation. And it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490.
Here's the problem. You have stains everywhere on your car seat, on your love seat, on your carpet, on your upholstery, on your silk shirt. Everywhere there are stains. Solution? Stains are out. Made with biodegradable organic banana oil, there are no other stain removers with the power. Stains are out. It takes out oil, nail polish, any stains, old stains, new stains, pet stains, independently laboratory tested to get all your stains out. Nothing better than Stains Are Out with over 30 million bottles sold. Stains Are Out is going to give you the best results you've ever had. It comes in a concentrate. One bottle makes 16 bottles of stain remover. Normally sells for $29.99. I know, sounds a little expensive, but that one bottle makes 16. That's $2 a bottle. And does your stain remover take out graffiti? That's right. Even graffiti comes out with Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere, or your money back. And here's the deal. Your deal of the week, if you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out, we'll give you a second bottle free. That's right, $29.99. Now you're going to get 32 bottles with a stain remover, still only $29.99. I want you to call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. But we're not done yet. If you, the first 50 customers, if you call within the first 50 customers, you're not going to get two bottles of Stains Are Out. We're going to double it again. Four bottles. That's right. Four bottles of Stains Are Out. 64 bottles worth of stain remover. Still only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. 888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. This is a powerful formula. This might be the best stain remover ever. Stain remover. You want to pick up the phone, call 1-888-877-0490. And here's the guarantee. Any stain, anywhere, on anything, or your money back. If it doesn't work for you, we'll buy the...
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
I'm now pleased to welcome Lisa Gunter, who has been conducting some very pertinent and enlightening research on breed labels. Lisa Gunter is a PhD student at Arizona State University in the Canine Science Collaboratory under the direction of Clive Wynn. She recently earned her MA in Behavioral Neuroscience, holds a BA in Journalism from the Evergreen State College. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. The first study you are going to review is titled Breed Stereotype Effects of Handler Appearance on Perceptions of Pit Bulls. What were you investigating there, and what did you find?
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So the first study that we conducted, we were curious about perceptions of dogs, and particularly perceptions of dogs in photographs. And so in our first study, we had three different dog breeds that were represented in photographs, and we had a Labrador, a Pit Bull type dog, and a Border Collie. And I say Pit Bull type dog because we're not quite for sure what she is. She looks quite like a Pit Bull, but she was adopted from a shelter, so we call her a Pit Bull type dog. And so participants were shown photographs, each one separately, of the Lab, the Pit Bull, and the Border Collie without labels, and asking them their perceptions of the dog, about the dog's approachability, intelligence, aggressiveness, friendliness, difficulty to train, and the dog's adoptability. So participants were asked about the Lab, the Pit Bull, and the Border Collie. And then we placed a handler with the dog. And what we're curious about that is, does the handler influence the perceptions of these very same dogs?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had an adult woman in a wheelchair with the Lab and an active-looking adult male with the Border Collie. And everybody saw those. And while we had them and folks rated them, that wasn't exactly what our interest was. Our interest was in the Pit Bull. And so participants saw one of three Pit Bull photographs. They saw the Pit Bull with an elderly woman, the Pit Bull with a rough adult male, and a male child with the Pit Bull. And it was important that they didn't see all three. We didn't want any carryover effects. And so we wanted to see what happens when a Pit Bull is photographed alone, how do people rate that dog, and then what happens when a handler is presented with that dog. And in the first part of the study, we were just looking at the dogs alone. We found that the Pit Bull was perceived unfavorably in every characteristic. So it was rated the lowest in friendliness, adoptability, approachability, and intelligence, and the highest in aggressivity and difficulty to train. So with that in mind, we were then quite curious about what happens when we put a handler with that Pit Bull. And what we found was that, in fact, the elderly woman and male child had a multidimensional effect on the Pit Bull. The elderly woman improved the Pit Bull's approachability, friendliness, intelligence, adoptability, and decreased the dog's aggressivity. In the male child, we saw very similar effects, that the male child improved friendliness of the dog, the intelligence, adoptability, and reduced aggressiveness and difficulty to train. So we were pretty interested in the results of that and curious and I guess surprised by it in some ways that a handler alone could change the perceptions of a dog that participants had just seen. So that was our first study.
And what do you think are the possible implications of these findings?
Well, I think that of this first study, I was quite interested in and why we kind of got involved in the first place is because I have a background in animal sheltering. And so, you know, it kind of made us wonder about, you know, upon these findings, we started wondering about perceptions of dogs in photographs and thinking about how dogs are photographed in shelters. And oftentimes they're photographed alone. We think about, you know, adoption, you know, on websites online that have photographs of dogs, oftentimes they're photographed alone. And so I think it definitely has some implications for dogs that are suitable to go to homes with maybe folks that are a bit older or with children. And in fact, placing these type of individuals that are appropriate for the dogs in photographs could, you know, improve the attractiveness of these dogs.
Very good. You also study the effects of labeling dogs as pit bulls on duration of stay in shelters. Tell us about that, Lisa.
Yeah, so after the first study with the photographs, we continued on with our our pit bull research, and that was mainly because we had seen that the pit bull was viewed as the least attractive dog when compared to the Labrador and the Border Collie. And we also knew that dogs and pit bull type dogs in shelters generally had longer lengths of stay. But what we were also learning, and I think, you know, any of your listeners that have volunteered at shelters or work at shelters know, is that breed identification in animal shelters is often done just by looking at the dog and determining what the dog's breed is based on the way it looks. But what a fair amount of studies have shown, about, you know, two and maybe a little bit more, have shown what staff and veterinarians think a dog may be at the shelter by looking at it by visual ID alone is different than what we actually find on DNA analysis. So that kind of, you know, kind of dovetailing those three together, pit bulls and shelters stay longer. Pit bulls are perceived unfavorably, at least in the photograph study. And we don't necessarily get it right with DNA and visual ID. We wanted to see what happens with dogs in shelters, particularly pit bull dogs, when they get labeled something different. And so we set up a paradigm of the pit bulls and the lookalikes. And so the pit bulls, in this first study, we used photographs again. So we're back to photographs. And we took photographs of pit bull type dogs that had been adopted out from Arizona Animal Welfare League over a couple year period. So we had some really great photographs of the dogs. And then we decided, you know, that to find their lookalikes. And when I say lookalike, it's dogs that looked very similar to the pit bulls. They were similar in stature and head shape, coat color, coat length. We even matched them so that they were close in years and body weight. But they had been labeled as some other breed. So maybe the breed was boxer, maybe the breed was shepherd. It could be any breed, but it wasn't a pit bull breed. Yet these dogs look similar. So we created... we found 15 matches of these pit bulls and lookalikes. Again, this is all via labeling by visual ID. None of these dogs were DNA'd. And so we were curious, what was the experience of these dogs in the shelter? They looked different. I mean, they looked very similar, yet they had been labeled differently. And in fact, we found that the pit bulls had about three times a long length of stay in the shelter as the lookalike dogs.
Wow.
Now, of course, this is just correlational. We were just, you know, we're looking, we didn't do any, you know, physical manipulations of the labels, but we saw a difference of three times the length of stay. So it made us wonder, well, do we miss something about these dogs? Is there something about these dogs that are different? So we asked those same questions again that we asked in our first study about the dog's aggressivity and friendliness and approachability and its intelligence. And we created what we called the dog's attractiveness, right? We took all the answers to those questions, created a composite score, which is essentially just an average, and then we normalized it because we found that a lot of different people kind of use these scales sort of differently. And when we crunched the numbers and took a look at, you know, did potential adopters, these were participants that were just walking into the shelter looking to adopt a dog, so potential adopters, did they rate these dogs any differently in photographs? And in fact, they didn't. They virtually rated them the same. And so that was really, you know, quite, you know, intriguing to us, that here were dogs that had, you know, very different experiences at the shelter, staying three times as long the pit bulls did, and yet, based on photograph alone, potential adopters did not view these dogs any differently in attractiveness.
Very interesting. Don't go away. More with Lisa Gunter right after the break. This is Dr. Lori Kirschner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of new and important issues concerning the welfare and rights of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in society. From whale protectors risking their own lives on the open seas, to lawmakers fighting to pass legislation to assist animals, to kids volunteering at their local shelter, Animals Today provides timely and in-depth analysis and interviews with experts and advocates from around the world. To listen, join us every week on this station, listen on iTunes, or go to animalstodayradio.com, where you can access and listen to all the prior shows. And like us on Facebook and share your views. Much of our financial support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. That's AIAnimals.org. So check them out. This is Dr. Lori, and thanks for listening.
You have stains everywhere, on your leather, on your car seat, on your love seat, any stain, it's all over the place. The solution, Stains Are Out, the most powerful concentrated stain remover that's biodegradable and organic and made from banana oil. You heard me right, banana oil. We've concentrated it. One bottle of Stains Throughout makes 16 bottles. It's $29.99 for 16 bottles, all comes in one bottle. That's a couple bucks a bottle. And here's the deal. If you want to get out tar, if you want to get out graffiti, all the stains, nail polish on any surface, anywhere, you get Stains Are Out. And the first 50 people aren't going to get two bottles, you're going to get four bottles. That's right, four bottles. That's $120 worth, still only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. We're going to get your stain out or your money back.
It's storm season. Bad weather is fast approaching, and if your power goes out, you'll need a strong flashlight. And that's where the Blackout Buddy emergency flashlight begins. You'll have a powerful LED flashlight right at your fingertips when the power goes out. Now, normally, a Blackout Buddy emergency flashlight retails for $24.99. We have a special offer today. If you call right now, 1-888-877-0490, that's 1-888-877-0490, you can get two of the Blackout Buddy emergency flashlights for only $24.99. But you have to call now. Call 1-888-877-0490. When the power goes out, the Blackout Buddy comes on. It plugs directly into your wall socket for constant charging. And when the lights go out, boom, you have super bright LED lights lighting the way. Call right now. Call 1-888-877-0490. You don't get one, you get two for just $24.99. But call right now or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
Attention invention and gadget lovers, join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several hundred dollars or $20-$30. Every month it's different, but we need your evaluation, and it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490.
Here's the problem. You have stains everywhere, on your leather, on your car seat, on your love seat, any stain, it's all over the place. The solution, Stains Are Out, the most powerful concentrated stain remover that's biodegradable and organic and made from banana oil. You heard me right, banana oil. We've concentrated it. One bottle of Stains Throughout makes 16 bottles. It's $29.99 for 16 bottles, all comes in one bottle. That's a couple bucks a bottle. And here's the deal. If you want to get out tar, if you want to get out graffiti, all the stains, nail polish on any surface, anywhere, you get Stains Are Out. And the first 50 people aren't going to get two bottles, you're going to get four bottles. That's right, four bottles. That's $120 worth, still only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. We're going to get your stain out or your money back.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the show. We're speaking with researcher Lisa Gunter about labeling of dogs at shelters. Lisa, tell us about the video study that involved look-alike dogs.
Sure, no problem. So in our third study, after we saw the potential influence, again, it was a correlational study in study two, but we saw a potential impact there of breed labeling, we really wanted to dive into study three and manipulate the labels a bit more to really kind of learn about their effect. So we used our same paradigm again of pit bulls and lookalikes, and we were asking the same behavioral and adoptability questions. But this time, instead of using photographs, we used videos. So we had five pit bull and lookalike matches, so for a total of 10 dogs. And what we showed to participants was the first time they saw all 10 videos, and the label or the words underneath the video said available for adoption, and everybody saw those. But then when they saw the videos again, so they were shown all 10 videos again, but this time the dogs had a label, a breed label on them. And they either had, perhaps it was the label that they got at the shelter, or it could have been their matches look-alike label. And so we wanted to see what is the influence of when they're, you know, what, how do the dogs viewed in their attractiveness without labels? And then once we put labels on them, what happens? And so not surprisingly, when the dogs had a pit bull label versus when they had a look-alike label, so just looking at the breed label alone, that when dogs had a pit bull type label, that they were seen as less attractive than dogs that had some sort of look-alike breed label, which in this study, there were hounds, I think it was hound, Labradors, labels like that. So potential adopters did view the pit bulls less attractive when labels were on. But what happens when we just looked at the dogs, the pit bulls that had been labeled at a shelter as pit bulls, and the lookalikes that have been labeled as lookalikes, but there were no breed labels? We just wanted to see, how do adopters view these dogs? And in fact, the pit bulls were actually more attractive than the lookalikes. And that was really surprising to us because we didn't expect to see a difference. Mm. If you remember from study two, that there wasn't any difference when people didn't see labels. So what we guessed there is that there's likely this interaction between behavior and appearance. And in fact, research from our own lab has suggested that while morphology is important to adopters, so is behavior in attractiveness of dogs. So there was some sort of interaction there going on with behavior and appearance, but the label was definitely, you know, playing a part. So we then asked the question, well, what about the pit bull label itself? What happens to the attractiveness of the dog when there's no breed label? And then the dog is labeled as a pit bull type breed. And what we found is that the label decreased the dog's attractiveness and that there was this negative impact of that sort of pit bull label, that likely folks see that label on, you know, and these were on dogs that previously had no label and were actually seen as more attractive. But that pit bull label, allowed them to access maybe likely some negative attributes that's associated with just the label alone.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Lisa. Earlier, spoke with Diane Summers about the Orange County Animal Services experience after removing breed labels from kennel cards. And I wanted to ask you to go a little deeper into the data. How did you study the effect of removing the cards, and what did you find?
So after our third study, We really wanted to take it further into like a real life situation, but we had some sort of ethical limitations that we didn't want to go into a shelter and manipulate the labels of dogs, and so we were pretty excited when in February of last year, Orange County Animal Services removed breed labels. They no longer were including them on kennel cards. They were no longer on online adoption profiles. They shared with us several years of their data, and we ended up just looking at the year before, 2013 to 2014, and then 2014 to 2015, like 1 year's worth of each of those. And we looked at that because from 2013 to February 6, 2014, there were breed labels in place. And so that's what we were looking at, is what does it look like when dogs have breed labels? And then from February 6, 2014 to 1 year later, when breed labels were not in place. And we wanted to know questions about adoptions and about length of stay. And we found that, you know, when the labels were removed for all the dogs, that adoptions for pit bull dogs alone increased by 72%. And in fact, there was also a 12% reduction in euthanasia. And so that was really, I mean, that was much bigger than we could have imagined.
Yeah.
So we were wondering, wow, did maybe adoptions decrease for other groups? You know, we wonder, is this like a shell game that if we increase one group, does it, you know, does another group kind of, you know, get the short end of the stick, so to speak? But in fact, we saw that every single breed group, we were using AKC breed groups to categorize the dogs, that every single breed group benefited from labels being removed. And overall, there was a 30% increase in adoption. And I have to point out here that there were several things that the shelter was doing at this time besides just removing breed labels. They were advertising the dog, the shelter pets, you know, all of the animals much more. And they also had expanded their operating hours. However, the benefit that the terrier group and specifically the pit bull saw was much larger, above and beyond what the other groups had seen. So we also took a look at length of stay, the total stay that a dog, you know, was in the shelter from the moment it entered to the moment it left. And did that decrease without breed labels? And in fact, it did. That the average length of stay was reduced for every group during this time period. And while pit bulls still had a longer length of stay compared to even just other terriers or other breed groups, they still saw a one-day reduction in this new without using breed labels. So, you know, our kind of takeaway from looking at, you know, kind of crunching this data, that again is just correlational because we did not manipulate necessarily anything. We're just looking at differences between the 2 years. But I think it's a really compelling case. Without breed labels, not only do pit bulls benefit in length of stay and increased adoption, but shelter-wide, all breed groups saw a benefit from removing breed labels.
Lisa Gunter, thank you so much for sharing your studies with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org.